Let's call the meeting to order. This is a Senate Labor and Conference Committee. Let the record reflect that it is approximately 1:35 p.m. on Tuesday, March 12th. We have a quorum. Senator Betty Davis is to my left, and Senator Meyer and Senator Thomas to my right. This is Senator Pascvan. I would remind everyone with respect to cell phones, pagers, that type of thing, because it is being recorded, that we ask you to turn them off, not just on vibrate, because it does interfere with the recording. We would also like the record to reflect that we are joined by Senator Bundy, and so we have a full staffing of the Labor and Commerce Committee. The purpose of today's meeting, I'm hoping to take up the following legislation. First, under bills previously heard, we will return to Senate Bill 39, which relates to the extension of the Board of Public Accountancy. Then Senate Bill 125 relating to the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. And number three, Senate Bill 114 relating to the extension of the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. And lastly, today, addressing the committee substitute for Senate Bill 10 from Health and Social Services relating to Medicaid and insurance for cancer clinical trials. Thank the members that are here today in the audience and those that may be off-site. And we will hear first regarding Senate Bill 39. We have already heard from the bill sponsor and opened it for public testimony 2 days ago on Tuesday, March 10th. It's my intent to open it up or offer the opportunity for public testimony. And if it's the will of the committee, then we would move Senate Bill 39 out. And then again, also, it's my intent to hear and move on Senate Bills 125 and 114. But beginning with Senate Bill 39, is there anyone in the audience that would address or would like to address the extension of the Board of Public Accountancy? Seeing no one, is there anyone off-site that would like to provide public testimony on the extension of the Board of Public Accountancy, which is Senate Bill 39? Hearing no one, Senator Bundy.
If you're ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
We are ready for a motion.
I move that we move from committee Senate Bill 39 with individual recommendations attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections from this committee? Hearing no objections, we'll take a brief at ease, sign off on Senate Bill 39, and we will next be addressing Senate Bill 125. So Committee, back to order. The next Senate bill is Senate Bill 125, and I am the sponsor of that, but I have my staff member, Chief of Staff Jeff Stepp, who may present if that's acceptable to the committee. And hearing no objections, Mr. Stepp, please address Senate Bill 125.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Stepp, and I'm an aide to Senator Pascvan. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 125, essentially on behalf of what's currently known as the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation. At their request, the Labor and Commerce Committee introduced this bill that simply seeks to change their name from the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation to the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. As I understand it, dropping the word development from their title reflects the maturity of the organization, where they're no longer limited to development, but they're a full-blown launch facility. And the new title, Alaska Aerospace Corporation, would more accurately reflect what it is they do now. And that's really as simple as it gets. There's a gentleman on the telephone, Dale Nash, who's the chief executive officer of the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, who's available to answer any specific questions about the name change or why it's important to them as an organization. So
if I would, I think the committee would like to at least hear from Mr. Nash. Bill?
Dale.
Dale, could you?
Thank you, Chairman.
Please identify yourself and state your affiliation.
This is Dale Nash. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation. We hope soon to be Alaska Aerospace Corporation. Jeff explained it very well. As we have grown, we've now completed 14 launches, have two more on the docket here in September and December, and continue to accelerate with the launches. As we travel about in the industry, oftentimes we get confused with purely an economic development agency. And as we deal with our customers, we're very much like a small Boeing or Lockheed. We contract with the government for launches. We provide services. We provide the launches. And this will just help clarify the fact that when they do come to us, we have the range, we have the facilities, we have the people to provide the entire package for our launch customers versus some of the other development organizations within states that are there to work to provide incentives, tax incentives for aerospace corporations to come to the state. Not that we want to discourage any aerospace from coming to the state, but we actually are growing this thing from the ground up, and this name change will much more accurately reflect that. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Any questions from any member of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm assuming the fiscal note, that's simply to get stationery changed and pens and pencils and signage and that kind of thing taken care of. Is that what that's for, Dale?
Through the chair, yes, sir, Senator Thomas. It's a small cost, and we have had some logo changes anyway, so it's probably timely.
Great, thank you.
Any further questions by any committee member? Thank you, Mr. Nash. Or Senator Bundy?
Are you ready for a motion?
is there a committee, we're ready for a motion? I believe the answer is yes.
And I would move, we move from committee Senate Bill 125 with individual recommendations, attached fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none, the Senate Bill 125 is passed on from this committee, and we'll take a brief at ease. Labor and Commerce back to order, and we now have before us Senate Bill 114, which is a bill submitted by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And on behalf of the committee, I have my staff member to present that. So, Mr. Stepp, please again identify yourself and speak to the bill.
Again, my name is Jeff Stepp, and I'm a staffer to Senator Passavant. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to present Senate Bill 114, which seeks to extend the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors sunset date from June 30th, 2009 to June 30th, 2017. We do have folks here from, I think online, from the Board of AELS who are prepared to testify on the merit of the bill, as well as representatives from the auditing organization. I'd just like to say that the audit appears to be very solid. There's several recommendations in there that you've probably read, three of them, each of which are being addressed by the board satisfactorily, and that the auditor does in fact recommend advancing the sunset to 2017. One thing that I was a little struck by in the audit was on page 17, and that is just the number of people who are licensed under this legislation: 539 architects, 478 land surveyors, nearly 3,000 civil engineers. Obviously, we want these folks to be registered and certified and keeping Alaskans safe in their work. So I urge the committee support of this legislation, and if there are no questions, would defer to anybody here who might want to testify.
Any question by any committee member of Mr. Stepp? What I'd like to do is go off-site to Mr. Richard Haran. Are you available?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Should I?
Yes, identify yourself, state your affiliation, and we will receive your testimony.
Thank you. It seems like this connection floats in and out, so I apologize if I get lost, but my name is Richard Haran. I'm a land surveyor on the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, and I would speak in favor of SB 114. I've reviewed the audit report, and it's very professional and very thorough, and I think I'm proud to say that I'm part of the board that that audit report reviewed. And I think in no small part the administrative staff, Ginger Morton, Vern Jones, Jennifer Strickler, and our investigator John Savage have had a lot to do with the progress we've made in the past 4 years. But I'm here to answer any questions. Again, I didn't prepare or wasn't part of the preparation in the audit report, but I could sure speak to any issues that anyone may have or questions that they may have.
Thank you, Mr. Haran. Mr. Stepp would like to make one additional comment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would like to draw the committee's attention to a proposed amendment, which is in your packet just behind the bill. And when the bill was introduced, there was an oversight. And part of the legislation that is imperative to the board needs to be added. Several years ago, there was a temporary non-voting member added to the board. That single piece of legislation needs to be included in this legislation, because that landscape architect's position on the board will expire if it's not included in this legislation. Is it not in there?
I don't see it.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
That should be.
Where do you have it, Ken?
I got it.
I have the bill. And this one off.
The amendment would just extend the term of a temporary member of the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. This maintains the status quo. This is the current legislation. And again, it was just an oversight that it wasn't included in the original bill, and would ask the committee to please consider adding that.
Senator Bundy.
And just to put it on the record, if I might, Mr. Herron, you're in support of the amendment.
Yes, yes, sir. The full board did not address it specifically, but I personally am in favor of it, yes.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, if I might, Professional Design Council has indicated they'd like to see this become permanent, and I'm just a question for you or your staff as to why we didn't open that can of worms at this time.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I think precisely for that reason, it's just a practical matter, a desire to keep the bill clean and move the bill so that the sunset is extended, understanding that this has been a can of worms in previous legislatures. There's been some discussion of introducing legislation that would make that position a permanent member of the board, but we would like to keep that separate from this extension.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, so that we can speak to the amendment, I'll move amendment number one.
Okay, any objection to receiving amendment number one before this committee? Hearing no objection, we have amendment number one to Senate Bill 114. Any questions by the committee of Mr. Herron? Seeing none, we thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
There is a Terry Schoenthal that they don't indicate here whether they would like to testify, but the name is on the list. Is there a Terry Schoenthal off-site?
This is Terry Schoenthal speaking from Anchorage.
Yes, and do you wish to speak to Senate Bill 114?
I would like to speak to Senate Bill 114. Mr. Chairman and fellow and members of the committee, my name is Terry Schoenthal. I'm here today representing the Alaska chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects. I would like to speak briefly to the amendment. I'm getting feedback. I don't know if anyway, I would like to speak to the amendment, if I may. The amendment maintains the status quo that's existed for 10 years now, basically. And the question was brought up, why has this not gone forward as making this a full voting member? And we are looking into that, and we've come to the conclusion that for the sake of getting the full vetting, that it would be better to introduce that as a standalone bill that would be addressed in that fashion. But for right now, without the amendment, the representation on the board goes away on June the 30th, I believe. And the concern that we have as an organization have is that the board is responsible for reviewing and licensing applicants from landscape architects in the state. And without a representative on the board, we have no way of actually participating in that. So we would thank you very much for your support of this and hope to see it move through. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Schoenthal by any board member or committee member? Seeing none, I would. Senator Bundy is on a roll.
I'm batting 1,000. If you're ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Bundy.
I would move that we move from committee Senate Bill 114 as amended, that fiscal individual recommendation.
Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 114 as amended is passed out of this committee. We'll take a brief at ease for signatures. We'll bring Labor and Commerce back to order. We now have before us continued discussion on Senate Bill 10, and I believe we had before us, as of the last meeting, the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 10, which is identified 26-LS0073-S. So I believe that that is just so everyone is on the same page. We have a member of Senator Davis's committee that is would like to address the committee.
Chairman Pasfan and other members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The committee substitute before you regarding cancer clinical trials reads, an act requiring health care insurers provide insurance coverage for medical care received by a patient during certain approved clinical trials designed to test and improve prevention, diagnosis, treatment, or palliation of cancer. Directing the Department of Health and Social Services to provide Medicaid services to persons who participate in those clinical trials relating to experimental procedures under a state plan offered by a comprehensive health insurance association and providing for an effective date. The clinical trials are research studies that test how well new medical approaches work in patients. Each study answers specific scientific questions and tries to find better ways to prevent, screen for, diagnose, or treat disease. Patients who take part in cancer clinical trials have an opportunity to contribute to the knowledge of and progress against cancer. They also receive state-of-the-art treatment from experts in the field. The National Cancer Institute is part of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, reports 6,000 cancer trials in the United States at any one time. They include trials in prevention, screening, diagnosis, treatment, quality of life, and genetic studies. Senate Bill 10 removes important barriers to the participation of patients in cancer clinical trials in Alaska. It requires that applicable health care plans, including Medicaid, cover routine patient care costs for patients enrolled in all phases of clinical trials, including prevention, detection, treatment, and palliation, or that is, supportive care of cancer. Currently, Alaska health plans may exclude coverage for routine patient care costs while a patient with cancer is enrolled in a clinical trial. Providers of health care plans often conclude that money is saved by excluding care while patients participate in clinical trials. But these patients, if not enrolled in clinical trials, will continue to receive conventional therapy at roughly the same or slightly increased cost in the short run. Over 2,600 Alaskans are diagnosed with cancer each year. In fiscal year 2007, an estimated 4,600 patients received cancer treatments through Alaska's Medicare program at a cost of $21.5 million. The average payment per beneficiary is about $4,675. The federal government reimburses the state at about 50% of total costs. Without in-state facilities and support of clinical trials, participants in Alaska currently must travel out of state, increasing the cost of non-emergency transportation, which is about 3% of total Medicaid costs. Studies have shown that only about 2 or 3% of adult cancer patients and less than one-half of 1% Medicare patients enroll in clinical trials of the approximately 20% who are eligible, largely due to fear of denial of insurance. A recent study found only a slight increase in the costs for adult clinical trials of patients compared to non-participants, $35,000 versus $33,000, or about 6% increase in cost for total patients. And I might mention that there are other, you should have in your package, a recent document that was released from the American Cancer Society that found that there was no increase in a study by from the Cancer Permanente Kaiser group from the Mayo Clinic found that that the cost of care for patients enrolled in clinical trials is little more than for patients who receive standard therapy. So there's support that the costs don't dramatically go up by including these people. The even if enrollment was increased to that full 20% I mentioned who would be eligible, it is unlikely these numbers will significantly impact the overall cost to health plans per the National Conference of State Legislatures clinical trials, what are the states doing, February of 2009 update. 23 or more states have passed legislation or instituted special agreements requiring health plans to pay the cost of routine medical care patients receive while participating in clinical trials. Passage of Senate Bill 10 will result in more successful outcomes in cancer treatments in Alaska, increased retention of patients in Alaska for their cancer care, and also, after full implementation, result in cost savings in the short and long run. A description of the Access to Cancer Clinical Trials Act of 2009 in Congress, H.R. 716, per the Hill's Congress blog of January 30th of 2009, sums up to a large extent what this bill is attempting to do. In quotes, clinical trials are so critical for patients or medical research, yet many patients find that their health insurance won't cover the rest of their routine cancer treatment if they decide to enroll in clinical trials. We're not asking that insurance companies to pay for clinical trials. This bill simply states that insurers must continue to pay for routine treatments that they would be paying for regardless if patients enroll in a clinical trial. No patient should ever have to fear exploring all treatment options at the cost of losing coverage. We should be encouraging participation in clinical trials, not discouraging it by removing coverage for routine care. Were it not for patients who have enrolled in past trials, the medical advancements we've experienced toward finding a cure for cancer would not be possible. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. Yes, Senator Bundy.
Thank you. And obviously, anyone with any common sense or experience in this arena wants progress made in treatment of cancer. Just a couple of questions, just for the record. As I understand it, anyone covered under an ERISA plan like the state employees, this legislation would not affect them directly. Is that correct?
That's through the chair, Senator Bundy. That's largely my understanding.
Okay. And mine as well. I just wanted to confirm that we're on the same page. And if I might, Mr. Chairman, just the impact on Medicaid, if this is included. I see there's no fiscal note. What you had said earlier that the impact would be de minimis on insurance rates, but state Medicaid is an ongoing challenge for us. So are you aware of what the impact would be on Medicaid?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I don't know that I have that answer. I think we could
get... have somebody here?
We may have someone...
Address that. You don't have to address it. Let the department.
There is, through the chair, there was a Medicaid, there is a fiscal note. I don't know if this is the one you were looking, though, but it was a zero fiscal note regarding Medicaid insurance, but that was dated February 4th. It reads, this bill requires companies that offer health care insurance in Alaska cover routine costs incurred by a patient enrolled in approved clinical trials related to cancer. The coverage must include the cost of prevention, diagnosis, and palliation. The health care insurer is required to provide coverage under this section only if the patient's treating physician determines there's clearly no non-investigational treatment alternative and available clinical, preclinical data provide a reasonable expectation that that the treatment provided in the clinical trial will be at least as efficacious as any non-investigational alternative. I think there's a better explanation. Someone, if they're online or someone here, could answer. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were back there, Mr. Sherwood. Let me have someone else speak to this.
Mr. Bundy, or Senator Bundy, would you like John Sherwood?
Whoever's going to
yes. Mr. Sherwood, please identify yourself. And
thank you. For the record, my name is John Sherwood. I work with the Department of Health and Social Services, and we did submit a zero fiscal note. We don't cover experimental treatment, but we do cover the ancillary costs, the routine cost of care currently. So we do not anticipate that actually making a statutory requirement that we do so would impact our budget.
If I might, just for my education, an ERISA plan will not be impacted by this, so a state employee would not necessarily be impacted by it, but someone, a citizen who's under Medicaid, would then be impacted by this legislation?
This legislation would statutorily require us to pay for what we're already paying for through our regulations.
Yeah, but I'm saying that it applies to the citizens.
It does apply to people who are on Medicaid, yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you consider or has anybody discussed the concept that potentially there would be some change in a cancer patient's situation that would cause somebody to say, well, this clinical or this experimental treatment is causing this and we're not going to pay it. An insurance company say, we're not going to pay this. We were comfortable with just paying the ongoing costs of various treatment and diagnosis and that type of thing, but now this has complicated it. Is that anything that has been discussed or thought of?
Through the chair, to make sure I understand your question, are you thinking of situations where someone on Medicaid would also have private insurance, and this might affect their private insurance coverage? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Let's just take the Medicaid patient and your situation with them, that the person is taking part in the experimental treatment, and ultimately some doctor says, well, the patient is not getting any better. Matter of fact, they're getting worse, and we are now treating other symptoms or other aspects of their cancer, and believes that it's caused by the experimental work, and starts to move towards the idea that we're not going to pay for that ongoing treatment that they would have had nothing gotten worse anyhow. Gotten better, that would have been a benefit, but it's getting worse. Does that make it clear?
Through the chair, I believe so, and I don't think we really factored in differentials in outcomes, again, because we're already making the payments for the ancillary costs. We didn't see this would change our experience as a result of passing the legislation. Essentially, our program would continue to operate the way it's operating today. We'd simply have a statutory direction to do so, but we don't now.
Okay. Just curious, I was a little unclear of the effect on other insurance companies. I understand your, and you agree that it...
Through the chair, I can speak to the Medicaid program, and I can't really speak to how it would affect other insurance companies.
Okay. That's fine. Thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Sherwood?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Meyer.
Just for my own clarification, Senator Bundy asked if this mandate contained in Senate Bill 10 imposes the same mandate on ERISA. Does that also include self-insured groups, or is that one of the same?
They can. Through the chair, my understanding is ERISA largely applies to self-insured entities. However, I'm not the expert on insurance, and so whether there's some distinctions there that I don't understand, I have to offer that disclaimer.
Okay. Well, I guess the question is how many people would this bill actually impact? Does anybody know?
Through the chair, I don't have that information.
Okay.
Senator Bundy.
And my understanding, and certainly, one life saved is an important life, but that would it affect only those people that have private insurance, and I think probably the majority of Alaska workers have some sort of an ERISA plan.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, Linda Hall would be far more authoritative than I am.
Senator Thomas.
An ERISA plan, thank you, Mr. Chairman. ERISA plan could be either or. It could be a self-funded plan where they administer it themselves, or it could be one that is a bid on and the various insurance companies bid on it. So could be one of both.
Senator All right. Any further questions of Mr. Sherwood? I believe we have a number of people, approximately 10, to testify. What I'd like to do, we have next is Jack McCray, who I believe is off-site. Mr. McCray, are you available?
I am online, Senator.
All right. Would you please identify yourself, state your affiliation, and with all witnesses, we are hoping to limit the testimony to 3 minutes, but we understand you may need a little longer than that if necessary, but certainly try to be precise.
No, Senator, I'll try to truncate as much as I can. My name is Jack McCray. I'm a senior vice president for Premier Blue Cross, and we have a subsidiary, the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska plan. I'd like to start out with by just mentioning that we do cover phase two and phase three now of cancer clinical trials, which are routine exams for our members. We do not cover phase one and phase four, and I'll go into that in a minute. The main reason we don't cover phase one is it's so experimental. I know there's been some discussions on cost, and I can talk about cost a little bit more in a minute, but we've not covered phase ones, and phase four of experimental is an issue that there might be other procedures that are better for the patient than the clinical trial. So when we get to phase four, we like to look at other types of procedures besides just the clinical trial when we talk about supporting our enrollees. We're also concerned about the mandating requirement on phase one and four. We do not have that requirement in Oregon and Washington, where we have carriers also. Under phase one, there's also a tremendous amount of funding in phase one by both the drug manufacturers and National Institute of Health and different funding mechanisms for phase one because it is so experimental. I sent a letter up to the committee, and I hope you have a copy of that of it in front of you now. I wanted to make sure we mentioned the phase one and phase four issue, and we do see this as a cost driver. We do not have since we do not pay in Washington or Oregon, we don't really have a good handle on how much of a cost driver it would be. But we believe if we start paying for phase one, what would happen is there'd be more and more phase one done, and not using some of the grants and Institute of Health funding involved, and our costs would increase in Alaska. But I really want to emphasize we're paying for experimental investigative medicine now in phases two and three.
All right.
With that, I'll stop, and if there are any questions.
Yeah. Yes, Mr. McCray, we do have your letter of March 9th, 2009. There are going to be a couple of questions for you. I have a preliminary question. When you use the term better for the patient with respect to either phase one or phase two, you're not offering that as a medical opinion, are you?
No, we are not. We don't make medical decisions, but we discuss with the doctor what might be the different options for the patient.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I put that in appropriate context. And Senator Bundy, you had a question?
Yes, thank you. Blue Cross or Premera administers the state health insurance plan, but as an ERISA plan, this bill would not cover, again, just from Blue Cross's point of view, would not impact the state health insurance plan, but it would impact the policies that you write for basically private industry in Alaska. Is that correct?
Yes, it would not affect any ERISA self-funded plans. It would impact the individual market and the small group marketplace.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I assume it is as a ordinary and normal business practice, any increase in costs would likely be passed on to the consumer.
Yeah, through the chair, yes, Senator. We put our rate filing in with the Division of Insurance up there, and they approve our rate filing in relation to the costs.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. McCray? Mr. McCray, thank you very much for your testimony on Senate Bill 10. We would now, I believe, also off net is a Krista Rangich.
Yes, this is Krista Rangich.
Please state any affiliation and provide your testimony.
My name is Krista. I'm a cancer research nurse at Providence Alaska Medical Center. I'm not representing Providence today. I'm testifying on my own behalf. I'm a strong proponent of this bill because I'm a research nurse, but I think more importantly because I'm a patient advocate and believe that everybody should be provided equal opportunity to participate in a clinical trial if they so choose. I'd like to take this opportunity just to quickly thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the Labor and Commerce Committee members for considering this bill and for allowing me to testify today. I'll try and keep it brief. From my perspective, when a clinical trial is recommended to a patient by their physician as the best treatment option, they're referred to my office. Part of our discussion about the study with the patient includes informing them that their insurance company may not cover some or all of the routine costs associated with treating their cancer while on the study. We strongly encourage all of our patients to find out what their policy says about clinical trial coverage. And this is a stage where, in my experience, we encounter the majority of barriers to patient enrollment to clinical trials. You know, they go through a lot emotionally and financially when being diagnosed with cancer, and the last thing I think they should have to worry about is finding out if their insurance will cover a clinical trial that their doctor feels is in their best interest. And I've noticed that one of our ever-increasing reasons for patients not enrolling on clinical trials is because of lack of or fear of lack of insurance coverage. There are many instances where, due to the severity of the cancer and the necessity to start treatment right away, there just isn't reasonable sufficient time to investigate if insurance will cover the clinical trial expenses, or the insurance company just takes too long to determine coverage. In closing, I feel that if insurance companies were mandated to cover routine care costs associated with clinical trials, I'm confident that many more people would be able to participate in clinical trials, which in turn would hopefully increase the likelihood of improved cancer treatments and maybe someday lead to a cure. Thank you again.
Thank you, Krista. There may be questions.
Sure.
Yeah, this is Senator Pascvan. Do you see any distinction between a phase one or phase four as compared to phase two or three in coverage?
Well, Senator, I believe one of the other senators had made mention that, you know, phase one trials are a lot of times funded by the cooperative groups or the pharmaceutical companies. So I don't foresee that there would be any increased cost. We currently have a phase one trial, but none of the expenses were billed to his insurance company because the pharmaceutical company paid for everything. And I can't really speak to the phase four because we don't have very many phase four trials. We don't have any open at this time. So I can't really speak to that.
Okay, does that raise any questions? Well, thank you, Ms. Rangich.
Thank you.
We will now move to Emily Nenon. Are you available?
Yes, Chair Pascha and the members of the committee. My name is Emily Nenon. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. And I know that a number of you have heard some information on this in its previous committee, but for the purposes specifically of the Labor and Commerce Committee, I'd like to put this issue in a context that may be a little more appropriate for this committee. The legislation that you have before you is one key piece in a much broader effort to remove barriers and increase participation in clinical trials. I wanted to let you know that the state and Alaska Native Comprehensive Cancer Control Partnerships are working together on developing and disseminating provider and patient education, increasing understanding of clinical trials. We're also working with non-state regulated plans. I know that's come up several times already, working specifically with some of the larger self-insured plans to educate them and get them on board with providing this coverage. I have just learned that Providence has decided to add this coverage for their employees. They're one of the larger self-insured plans in the state. And we do feel it is important to include all the phases of the trials. The one other thing that I want to bring to your attention is a document that you should have all received, but I don't know if you have in front of you. It's got a big American Cancer Society logo at the top, and it's a collection of studies that have been done looking specifically at the cost. And the title is the statement, "The costs of routine care provided in a clinical trial are comparable to the costs of standard therapy." There have been a number of studies done, and what we find is it tends to come out in the wash. One of the studies you'll see in the middle of that sheet referring to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York showed that the overall average cost of treating clinical trial patients was 17% less than treating patients receiving standard care. That's just one example, and I just wanted to highlight that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you all may have. Thank you.
Any questions of Emily by the committee? We would thank you and the American Cancer Society for your testimony today. Claire Wadup, is she available?
Yes, I'm here. My name is Claire Wadup. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for letting me testify. I'm doing so on a personal basis. I benefited personally from clinical trials through my breast cancer treatment. They wouldn't know what to have done with me or for me without clinical trials, and I feel very strongly that I need to give back, and I want to participate in clinical trials, and I'm glad to be able to do so, but I wouldn't be able to do it if there was a financial hardship involved for me. So I believe this bill will definitely help more people do as I'm doing and participate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claire. Any questions of the committee for Claire Wadup? Seeing none, we thank you. Is there a Lath Subramanian? Is there a person by the name of Lath? Or Lath?
This is Latha Subramanian.
Yes, please state your affiliation and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee for letting me speak as well. My name is Latha Subramanian. I am a medical oncologist in Anchorage and am a very strong proponent of clinical trials, and so will speak in favor of SB 10. And the reason I'm such a strong proponent is I've run into multiple situations where when I'm taking care of patients with cancer and decide with them what is the best way of treating them, sometimes it happens to be a clinical trial. And personally, my patients and I, two of them in particular, I remember very vividly. One of them is still ongoing. The other happened about 2 years ago, a patient with esophageal cancer, which is really, esophageal cancer is oftentimes a death sentence. He had the opportunity to receive a new drug called oxaliplatin, which was only available for that cancer under a clinical trial, and he opted to be treated under clinical trial. And lo and behold, he and I found out that his insurance would not pay for it. We appealed it to the limit. The end result was we will not pay for it because this is investigational. And his wife actually, I think, has written a letter or emailed the committee about the frustration that she and her husband went through. But just to show that when he did go to surgery, his esophageal cancer was in remission. They did not find it. Then another patient that I'm going through the chaos right now is a lady with sarcoma who also cannot enter the clinical trial because of insurance. So that's just a personal aspect of what we are talking about, because it happens to real people, people whom we know and whom we can do something for. And cancer is not uncommon. Cancer is one of the commonest diseases. I mean, who amongst us does not know anybody who's had cancer or a friend, a neighbor, a relative. We hear about it in the news all the time. And the only way to make advances in cancer treatment is through clinical trials. I mean, that's taken for granted because cancer is one of those diseases where we don't have time or we don't have lots of effective standard treatments. All the benefit we've seen is through patients who have been brave enough to enter clinical trials and through the insurers who have paid for these patients who have entered clinical trials. And since this is labor and commerce, I'll talk a little bit about the cost. And I also want to emphasize, like some of the other speakers have, that the cost we're talking about is not the cost of the whole clinical trial. What we're talking about is just one little piece that is involved in running a clinical trial, and that is the routine patient care costs. There are several other costs. The majority of the cost is borne by the sponsor, by the study group, but it is just the care, the standard care of the patient, which the patient would be covered under the insurance if they were not participating in the clinical trial. And that's what drives us as physicians, as patients, nuts when we come across it, because it just doesn't make any sense. And I know Primera talked about phase one and phase four, but one thing that was not mentioned is that phase one study involves a very small number of patients, sometimes as few as 20, sometimes maybe as many as 80, whereas in a phase two or a phase three trial, the number of patients that are involved are like 3,000 to 4,000. In a phase two trial, it's 200 to 300. So add up the numbers. The cost of a phase one trial for taking care of the patient care cannot be that enormous. It cannot, there's no reason why that should drive up the cost of the insurance for everybody in terms of premiums. Now, as far as phase four trials, especially in cancer, and nowadays the trial picture has changed as well. There are more new drugs, there's more knowledge available, and people are antsy to get the new drugs out into the market. So the phase four trials are conducted to further study the safety and other effects, sometimes to find other benefits of the drug. It may have been approved for a certain condition, and a phase four study is conducted, and it's found that it works for something else. And a good example is tamoxifen, which is an old drug for breast cancer. And then there was a study conducted for prevention of breast cancer, and it shows that it works in preventing breast cancer. And the other side of the coin, and when we talk about cost, we do need to remember that when we find out through clinical trials that a treatment is effective, we have to take it into account that this costs savings because the patient doesn't get worse, the disease doesn't recur. And some of the advances that have been made through clinical trials, and this was just, this is very new information too. In January this year at the Gastroenterology Symposium through ASCO, which is our national committee, national organization, it was reported that a new test called KRAS mutation, using that will actually decrease the care of patients with metastatic, the cost of the care of patients with metastatic colon cancer by about $604 million a year. And that's because when patients with metastatic colorectal cancer have KRAS mutation done, if they have the mutation, they will not benefit from a drug called cetuximab, which is otherwise routinely used in the treatment of colon cancer. And there's several other examples like that that I can give you. Another example for phase four study, the one everybody knows about, is a Vioxx. The cardiac toxicity was only discovered on a phase four trial. So, yes, insurance pays for the routine care costs, but they do save money in terms of better care because the patients don't get ill. And the other advances through clinical trials locally that our patients have participated in and that has helped patients, one is a drug called Herceptin. Another is Rituxan and newer drugs that we've got. I remember a young patient with lung cancer who wanted a drug called Iressa. So we got it for her on a compassionate basis, and she lived for over a year because we were able to provide that drug. And if the insurance hadn't paid for her routine patient care costs, she would not have been able to continue care. I will stop there, but I just hope it helps to give you an idea of how important an issue for this is. The thing to remember also, Medicare patients are covered, so why shouldn't younger patients be covered? And the insurers say it will raise the premiums for the non-insured, but where is the data for that? I mean, there's all the studies that have shown there's very minimal to actually no increase in the routine care when patients are treated under clinical trials. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been informative as to phase one and phase four clinical trials. We do have a question from Senator Bundy.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Just to help me in my understanding, I've had some personal experience with chemotherapy, and it's, as if my memory is correct, the actual drugs are incredibly expensive, thousands of dollars per treatment. But when you talk about routine care, are you talking about the IV that administers the drug, the infusion room, cost of that, the cost of someone to take vitals, routine doctor office visit? Is that what you're talking about when you talk about routine care?
Yes, that is what is routine patient care. It's just the standard office visits. As far as the drug goes, it depends on the particular study. Sometimes the sponsor of the study will provide the drug, and sometimes it is covered by, or it is supposed to be covered by the insurer.
Yeah, and if I might, Mr. Chairman, and just to get a comparison or maybe a percentage or however we compare it, someone's in for an infusion of a cancer-fighting drug that may cost $3,000 or $4,000 a treatment. What would the routine care for that infusion cost? An office visit, the infusion.
The infusion charge is the same whether it is
a treatment
drug or a drug that is not given under the clinical trial. It's just the within a clinical trial, what happens is all the data is collected, so it does benefit other patients who come later, or sometimes the patient happens to get a drug which would otherwise not be available commercially, and if that turns out to be the better treatment, like it turned out with Herceptin, early breast cancer, then those patients have benefited from it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I answered your question, or maybe I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I'm afraid I didn't ask it artfully. What I'm asking is, what is the per visit, on the average, what would a routine cost be per visit?
It depends on how long the infusion is, because some infusions are just 30 minutes, and then some of them are 3 hours, and so it varies.
So a 30-minute infusion would cost what?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no further questions, we do thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
We would now continue in public testimony with Dr. Jeannie Anderson. Would you?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we very much can. Would you please identify yourself, state your affiliation, and provide the testimony?
Great, thank you. My name is Dr. Jeannie Anderson. I'm a medical oncologist in private practice at Katmai Oncology Group in Anchorage. I'm also the treasurer for the Denali Oncology Group, which is the consortium of oncology physicians in the state of Alaska. And I'm also the medical director for the research program in the Cancer Center here at Providence Alaska Medical Center. I've previously submitted testimony that describes the importance of this bill. Obviously, that's been discussed at length. I've also submitted a letter to Senator Taskin earlier this week, which I'd like to try to summarize. Before I do so, I'd just like to mention the question about how many Alaskans will benefit from this bill. My understanding from Linda Hall and her testimony last year was that approximately 40% of Alaskans would fit under this bill, and then the other 60% are self-insured or it doesn't apply to them. I think that question came up a little while ago. So the benefits of participating in a clinical trial are clear to patients and physicians. And we've talked before that some healthcare insurers have refused coverage for the cost of treatment, as the perception has been in the past that costs will be higher if they enroll in a clinical trial. As we've mentioned before, a number of studies have been done. There's been one study that's widely quoted showing that costs were 6.5% higher for patients treated on clinical trials. But as several people have already testified, and as we in the Denali Oncology Group in our position paper, which I hope the senators all have copies of, we've given a number of references that show, and some have already been quoted, that costs may be lower. Furthermore, since the year 2000, Medicare beneficiaries have been allowed to participate in clinical trials, and there's been no reports that there's been increased costs in these patients. I'd like to emphasize the situation where there's actually potential for reduced costs in clinical trial participation, and I'll briefly give two examples. In the 80s and 90s, patients with breast cancers thought they would live longer if they received high-dose chemotherapy followed by bone marrow transplant, which everyone can respect as a very costly treatment. Many patients sued their health care insurers to obtain such treatment, and that resulted in thousands of these procedures being done outside the guidelines of clinical trials and without information obtained on safety and efficacy. Eventually, patients did enroll in clinical trials, and they compared this aggressive treatment to standard treatment and found that transplantation was neither effective nor safe as treatment for breast cancer patients. And in my opinion, if patients and healthcare insurers had been more motivated to participate and more able to participate in these carefully controlled clinical trials, we would have obtained the results of the study sooner, maximized their safety, and reduced healthcare costs. The second example that I want to mention is an ongoing national study that we have open here at the Providence Alaska Medical Center, which I've enrolled four patients in this study. This one is taking a simple blood test to predict whether or not patients respond to chemotherapy after they've been on treatment for only 3 weeks. Typically, in a patient not on a clinical trial like this, we'll treat them for 6 or 8 weeks, and then we'll determine whether or not we think they're benefiting. The benefit of this study is that if the test is positive and shows what the theory is looking at, is that this test predicts response to chemotherapy after 3 weeks, we'll be able to stop treatment earlier, again, reducing the risks of chemotherapy and preventing additional treatment that patients may not benefit from in a much sooner, more timely fashion. And then finally, when the issue comes up about participation in studies and whether or not there's appropriate safety, I'd like to mention that there's multiple layers of safety built into a clinical trial that helps patient safety without increasing cost. And I'm not going to go through the detail. That's in my letter here where I've specified the different points of how a clinical trial enhances patient safety. But in summary, I think one of the reasons why costs can be maintained for patients who participate in clinical trials is, one, we improve the outcome, and two, we reduce safety because of all the different levels in it that allow for oversight of the care of the patient. So again, I'd also like to emphasize that all phases of clinical trials, phase 1, 2, 3, and 4, all have a sound scientific rationale. They have data supporting potential benefit to patients. There's careful attention to safety, and therefore my personal recommendation would be that we allow all phases of clinical trials to be open so that we can allow the cancer physician and patient to have the unrestricted opportunity to consider treatment on well-designed clinical trials that will help improve safety and outcome and in the long run control costs for our cancer patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson, and I do have your March 9th, 2009 letter addressed to me as the chair of the Labor and Commerce. I believe everyone has that in their packet. If anyone does not, I can certainly make a copy, but I believe you do. Anyway, Senator Bundy has a question.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Dr. Anderson. I have actually been present in your Katmai infusion suite, and it's elaborate. I'd say it's an impressive medical facility, and it seems to be very patient friendly. But just trying to get my head around what routine costs would be, which are going to be paid for the non-experimental people. And could you give us a ballpark figure of what an hour in the infusion center without the drugs, just the routine costs, what that would be?
I'll make a few comments. One, I think, as Dr. Subramani was commenting, I don't really know because I don't deal with the billing, and I actually very intentionally stay out of that because I want my decision-making to be based on what's best for the patient, not what the cost is going to be.
All right.
But I think the cost of many drugs which are FDA-approved and still on patent but not generic are in the order of thousands of dollars. The office visits and infusion is in the order of hundreds of dollars. So I think I'd put it in the range that drugs are in that more likely tenfold cost of nursing costs and doctor's visits and IV tubing and things like that. So if that can help you put it in the order of magnitude, but exact costs I don't pay attention to. I more try to remember what doses of drugs I need to give rather than how much it costs. But I would also say that I think in most of our clinical trials, the drug is supplied, especially when it's a relatively new drug and we're sorting out the indication, or especially if it's an experimental drug. On the other hand, if it's a standardly used drug that's just comparing one schedule versus another schedule, quite often those are generic drugs and are not extremely expensive. Or they would be given anyway, even if the patient were not on a clinical trial.
Yeah, thank you, Doctor.
And okay, you're welcome.
The order of magnitude was, I guess, what I was looking for. That was my impression, that the drugs themselves could be thousands and thousands of dollars. So the routine costs then are in the hundreds. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. We appreciate your participation in this process. We have now a Douglas Blaney. Is he available?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify by telephone. My name is Douglas Blaney. I'm a professor of medicine at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and also president-elect of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which is a 26,000-member professional association, of which we have we've just heard two of our members in Alaska, Dr. Subramani and Dr. Anderson, and I'm testifying on behalf of ASCO. ASCO has helped many states' legislatures understand and move forward with clinical trial legislation such as you're considering. We have submitted a written letter, which I won't repeat. I would like to address two or three points that have come up in regards to further testimony, in regards to previous testimony. First of all, this, the issue of phase one clinical trials. So in cancer, patients with cancer, these phase one or new drugs are given to patients with a known diagnosis of cancer with the intent not only of determining the toxicity, but also determining what dose and also determining whether they will be effective in that tumor type. Clearly, phase one drugs in cancer are different than phase one when used in normal volunteers. Often, high blood pressure medicines, headache remedies, etc., will be used in normal volunteers. And I think it's useful for you all to make the distinction between phase one drugs in cancer, which are used with some therapeutic intent and are covered by Medicare in this population. Second point I'd like to make is regard to phase four studies. So phase four typically are studies of drugs that are approved for marketing, so that they would be paid for anyway by insurance companies or third-party payers. And the clinical study aspect of things is looking at side effects, and as Dr. Anderson pointed out, gaining larger experience with these drugs, again, which are approved for marketing. So the costs of collecting the data or making the observations are paid for by the sponsor of the study, but the drugs typically are given for are given with therapeutic intent as they would be routinely, even if a patient was not participating in a clinical study. So we are advocating again that phase 1, 2, 3, and 4 costs be covered. Finally, in response to in further response to Senator Bundy's question in regards to the routine care costs, the costs of the infusion of these drugs are typically in the order of seven on an hour paid on an hourly basis, and much in the $100 range per hour. The more important aspect is what happens if the patient suffers a complication of the therapy. For instance, people with lung cancer often get what we call pleural effusions, or collections of fluid around their lung, which have to be drained so that breathing can be restored, and other symptoms of the cancer are managed. Often, we've seen these provisions where routine care costs are not covered be used to deny care for complications of the cancer, which would discourage patients and saddle them with large bills for the routine costs, not only of the clinical trial, but of their care that results from the complications of the cancer. And again, finally, I think keep doing this, allowing your oncologists in Alaska to participate in clinical trials, will keep patients close to home, not have them come to Washington or Oregon or other cancer centers outside of Alaska. We'll keep them close to home, which I think is better for all concerned. So again, we support SB 10, and I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for providing your telephonic testimony from the great state of Michigan. Any questions for Dr. Blaney, I believe is the pronunciation? No questions from the committee. Again, thank you very much. I believe that is the last person who has signed up for an off-site testimony. Are there anyone else that is hearing no other person? We just have one additional person present, which is Marie Darlin from AARP. If you would please provide your testimony, and we may be done with public testimony on Senate Bill 10 after Ms. Darlin testifies.
Thank you. I'm Marie Darlin, representing the Capital City Task Force of AARP, and I could make this real simple if you're on a roll and just say pass it. However, I'll do this correctly. We just want to say that we are in favor of the bill and know that most of the significant advances in cancer treatment have come about because of clinical trials. And so if you've already read our letter, you know that we say it makes no sense not to offer health insurance coverage for procedures that may still be experimental but do offer some hope for cancer victims. You purchase insurance so that you can have help with costs that accompany any threatening disease, and this bill is one that IARP believes makes sense, especially to a cancer victim and his or her family. So therefore, we do recommend an aye vote on Senate Bill 10.
Any questions of the committee for Marie Darlin? Seeing none, we do thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
Again, one last opportunity for public comment. Is there anyone off-site that has not testified that would like to testify? Or is there anyone local that would like to provide public testimony? We have Mr. Obermeyer on behalf of plan sponsor.
Local or just mildly disturbed?
Briefly, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. Again, I just wanted to call the committee's attention to the letter from the American Association for Cancer Research dated December 1st of 2008 from Kevin Cullen, MD, director of the University of Maryland Maureen and Stuart Greenbaum Cancer Center, that indicated the tremendous need for phase one trials. I thought it was a very lengthy and accurate description of the need for them. I won't go into all the details, but they also described how the National Cancer Institute had done trials on 12,000 individuals and had found that they had patients had experienced 10.6% objective response, positive response, and it increased to 17.8% when one drug included in the trial was already FDA approved. This was signed by three physicians and PhDs from the president of the American Association for Cancer Institute, president of the Association of American Cancer American Cancer Institutes. One was a cancer research group, and then the third one was the American Society of Clinical Oncology. I think it's a very persuasive document regarding phase one trials. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. Any questions regarding that letter? I know that there was a Dennis Bailey at Ledge Legal that was available for any questions. Is there any need for the committee to ask Mr. Bailey any questions, or are there any observations that Mr. Bailey believes he should provide to the committee? Maybe Mr. Bailey isn't there.
I could respond to the second part of your question. I don't think that there's anything that I need to add, but I'd be happy to see if I can address questions.
Any questions of the committee of Ledge Legal as to Senate Bill 10? Seeing none, I would thank you, Mr. Bailey, for sitting through the last hour to be available for questions, but I believe that is the end of, and I'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 10. Is the committee prepared to discuss Senate Bill 10? We have the committee substitute before us, and possibly.
Mr. Chairman, I don't necessarily want to discuss the bill much further than what you've already gotten, but I do want to say that this bill has gone through Health and Social Services Committee and got a very good overview of that, and many people testifying for it. We also had this bill before us last year. It's come back almost the same way that it was presented. It did pass through Labor and Commerce last year, and not being able to get out of finance last year before the session end. This is an important piece of legislation, and I certainly would like to see that it passes this year. And as far as the cost, if we're concerned about it, I was reading in many of the papers that I read that people that have gone through clinical trials said that many of the times the medicine that they had, even though it cost thousands of dollars, it was not the insurance that was paying for it, but it was grant monies, funds, or insurance companies that was paying for it in full because it was their product, and it did not leave that much left for their private insurance to pay. And some of that information is in your binder as testimony that people have sent in. So, and since this is labor and commerce, I suppose that's what we'd be concerned about, the cost. And if we're going to help 40% of the people, that's better than not helping any. And that was the statement that was made, that said probably 40% of the people would be able to benefit from this, so the six might help ERISA and not be covered, don't have to pay. So I don't see any need that we need to discuss it any further, but it's my bill, and so I feel partial to it, but not because it's my bill, because of things that have happened to me personally. And I would love to see that in this state, people do not have to get on a plane and go to other places to get what can be done here.
Well, I, for one, agree. And Senator Meyer.
Just a question for the sponsor. If it's got zero fiscal notes, does it need to go to finance?
No, I was going to ask if it could be waived because I didn't know it wasn't going to be a note, but it has to go there because it's a sign there, but they could waive it out.
Mr. Bundy, you are the man of the hour.
Well, I just was going to make a comment. I spent far too many hours in the Katmai Infusion Center, but I think it's important to note that the major expense in cancer treatment are the drugs. and that the routine cost, even though, you know, percentage-wise, it's not inexpensive, but it's percentage-wise, it's a lot smaller than the major cost of the drugs. Though, following my normal pattern of behavior, it's important we point out there's no free lunch. That this, if it is covered, there will be some costs involved, even though it's a smaller percentage of it. And I suspect the committee will want to move forward with this, but as we do, we just need to do it with our eyes open and full knowledge of the usual unintended consequences that tend to arise and as we try to make things better. I have, in private conversation, I've heard that as we went through a colorectal screening, that once it was established in the private insurance arena, the state began to follow, seemed to follow. And I am concerned about the 60% of people who wouldn't be covered by this. But if past experience is any measurement, the state is apt to then begin to adopt these as well. So we won't be having haves and have-nots, or additional haves and have-nots in insurance. So with that, if you're ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Bundy.
I move that we move from committee CS for Senate Bill 10 with individual recommendations, zero fiscal note.
Any objections? Hearing none, CS for Senate Bill 10 is moved out of Senate Labor and Commerce. And the committee for Thursday is now closed, adjourned.